Yes, hello, folks. Welcome to the second episode of the weekly Manchester United podcast. Of course, this joint venture between myself, Mal Cairns, Phil Brown, Beyond the Pitch, with the excellent James Rhodes at United Muppeteers. Thanks to all of you who downloaded the podcast in its first week. All your feedback, we really appreciate that. Don't forget you can download this podcast on any of my platforms and any of United Muppeteers platforms, as well as watch it on YouTube. And like we said last week, at some point we'll start doing these live. We'll make that happen soon. So first of all, my friend, how you doing, James?
Good. How are you? Good to talk again on this.
Yes, it's good to talk again. It's been another interesting week for Manchester United.
Another one? Yeah.
I was writing down the things to talk about this week, and I'm on my second page already, and there hasn't been a game. Once again, multiple statements to talk about. Used to be one of these a year, maybe 2 year tops. Now there's one or two a week. So much to talk about, of course, the Jadon Sancho situation, which is again ridiculous. I want to talk a little bit about the McFeeney interview. We talked about Cristiano Ronaldo, of course, and his standards. We'll talk about Anthony. Seems incredible we're talking about these things. The takeover, which of course we mentioned a little bit about earlier in the week, Brighton, and then of course the endless conversation surrounding Harry Maguire. We'll see what else we can get to. So, my friend, let me start with Jadon Sancho, since that's what is primarily driving the news this morning.
Yep.
A quick summary, as you know. We talked about this on last week's show, of course, Sancho having repeatedly shown up late for training. It's something that's followed him throughout his career. And then, of course, this went public, Jadon Sancho releasing his statement pinned to his profile, which has now been taken off. You and I spoke earlier in the week about Sancho, there was good information going around that Jadon was removed from the first team dressing room, locker room, whatever you want to call it, on Tuesday. I'd asked United about that and they refused to comment, so it's now confirmed, which I'm sure they didn't want it out there, but then at that point...
That happens.
Yeah, and the only thing I wasn't sure about, like we had talked about, was it because of international break, was that, was he training away with the kids? Well, and I know that was not the case, that has been confirmed. And then it brings me the question, who wins in this? Because... I'm not quite sure why Ten Hag went public, even though he had to have known what was coming down the pipe with, of course, Anthony. Whether that was the smartest move, no matter how frustrated you are, and of course, why Jadon Sancho retaliated in the way he did, because probably more than ever, this would have been Jadon Sancho's opportunity to break into Manchester United. Probably more than ever, Manchester United need him.
Yep.
And he has now been told that he's going to be training away from the first team squad. Where does this leave us?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly doesn't leave us in the best situation. We have, at this moment in time, at Manchester United, three right wingers who cannot play for the club right now. Mason Greenwood, who was obviously sent on loan and will be playing for Getafe probably this weekend. Mm. His first return to football, whatever your feelings about that, he will be playing there, but not for Manchester United. Anthony, that we'll talk more about, who's obviously suspended. Well, not suspended, I guess. He's away from the first team.
Yeah, very not careful suspended. With the wording on that.
Yeah,
were,
away from the team. Mm-hmm. Yep, away extended from the leave. Team for indefinite. Mm-hmm. We don't know. This could be years, to be quite honest. I mean, when people look at the Greenwood situation, you just don't know. It could be weeks, it could be months, it could be longer. Mm. And then Jadon Sancho, who is now not available. And this leaves you with, in your front line, that at the, I think that for Erik ten Hag, probably on August 1st, he thought he'd have Garnacho, Sancho, Rashford, Højlund, Anthony Martial, Anthony, and Mason Greenwood. Seven options. Palistri, Amad Diallo. Nine players in that front three, for that front three. Now you're down Amad Diallo injured, Greenwood gone, Anthony gone, Sancho gone. Rasmus Højlund had a back issue. They're still talking like he can't play two games a week. I'm not sure about that, but we'll see. That might be the case. So you're down to basically, in terms of senior players, you know, Marcus Rashford. Because you can't rely on Anthony Martial to stay fit and healthy. To his credit, he showed up to training early today instead of late, according to some reports. So, that's better than the alternative right now. Maybe he's trying to put the work in, which good for him. You know, if he's doing so despite everything, not good, is it? But you know, the problem is that, like you said, I'm not sure about Ten Hag going public. At the same time, you know, all the talk is, of course, you know, this war, this fight between Sancho and Ten Hag and how it's here and this is where it is and who's right and who's wrong. You know, was Sancho right? Are there favorites being played? Does it matter? Is the manager allowed to play favorites with his team selection? Is he allowed to pick who he wants? Probably yes. Does a player have a right to feel upset? Probably yes. The bigger issue that it comes back to is, how did we get here in the first place? How did we get to this situation with Jadon Sancho where the relationship is so fractured between him and the club? Because when things like this happen, it's not the beginning. It's the end of a long, long cycle. And, you know, The Athletic did a story, Larry Whitwell, before, you know, the official of him being removed from training and all that, talking about his time under Ronaldo, which we'll talk, you know, about Ronaldo and Phelan's interview and all that, but talking about how he was promised, you know, the number 7 shirt. Sounds like a little thing, but he was promised the number 7 shirt. Then he showed up. They took it off of him and took it off Cavani, who was none too pleased about the situation as well, by the way, when Ronaldo showed up. So there's two players that were bothered by broken promises that season. And then there were situations with battles in the dressing room with Cristiano Ronaldo wanting to change formation, with Rangnick, with all of that. And it resulted in a year or longer of building tension between Jadon Sancho and the club after arriving, after being just a bona fide superstar in Germany. He was one of probably the top 3 most promising young players on the planet at that time when he left there. And that's all before Erik ten Hag, you know, and this is a common theme that I think is more worth discussing, because, you know, one can talk about winning or player power or any of that, and that's fine, except at the end of the day, there's a player who United wanted for years that had 40 goal and assist records over multiple seasons as a teenager in Germany and in the Champions League too, not just Germany, but in Champions League games. He was a performer. That is no longer an asset for Manchester United. And how did it get to that position? If this was a one-off, that would be one thing. But look at it, like you said, we've got players out suspended under allegations, where with Antony, there was charges filed in 2022. Did they know about this and signed him anyways, knowing that this could be a situation? Did they check about all of this? How thorough are these background checks? They have the Greenwood situation, which the club likely knew about since he was maybe 14 years old, 15 years old. There's already things happening. But in addition to that, you have many players over the years who've talked about the broken promises at Manchester United from when they signed. And that really is at the kind of the core foundation of this. They knew who Jadon Sancho was when they signed him. He had these issues at Dortmund. Everybody knew who he was.
I mean, in his slight defense, I will say this, it's not uncommon for young players to be tardy. Right, yep. It's not uncommon for young players to do stupid shit, right? To not train properly, to not come in and be on time for training. I mean, Mason Greenwood had this problem. Lots of players have this problem. I mean, I've heard stories of players being asked things like, who's the worst trainer at the club? And some of the stories they tell you are just incredible about, you know, certain players who are really poor in training. And, you know, I heard stories about Eden Hazard, for example. Mm-hmm. That was pretty appalling in training. Someone called him the laziest player he's ever seen, but would go out on the pitch on a Saturday and be absolutely exceptional. Yeah. That is the difference, though, right? Yeah. You can get away with being a bad trainer if you go out on the pitch on a Saturday and you were exceptional. There has to be a payoff, right?
Yeah.
And lots of players lots of players do that. The problem is when you don't train properly and you go out and play. You're terrible on a Saturday. There's little justification for tolerating that.
Yeah.
So with Jadon Sancho, I don't know if it's enough to not sign him because he shows up late for training. Sometimes you expect players to mature and grow out of that. As we were saying, he's young, he's a teenager, these things happen. You get proper people around him, you can change that. But in order to change that, you have to have a strict core discipline at the club.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have leaders in your dressing room that where the manager doesn't need to lay down the law. Players inside the dressing room are going to hold you accountable for mm-hmm. that. They're going to be the ones that are going to say, hey, if you're on time, you're late. Right? That's what, you know, if you look at lots of great clubs, even United in their past, you know, Roy Keane was an extension of Alex Ferguson in the dressing room. They were the ones that laid down the law before they even got to Ferguson, right?
Yep.
Ronaldo, as we've just found out through the Mike Phelan interview, in which we already knew anyway, was another person demanding the highest standards, the standards of the Manchester United that he was at before, right? Mm-hmm. Which no longer exist. And of course, players don't want to conform to that because they've never had to conform to that. And there's limited accountability when it comes to stuff like that. This happens at Chelsea too, where the manager isn't in complete control of who comes in and who comes out of the football club. So of course you get exactly the same stuff. You get rotation through managers. You get a playing squad that's expansively assembled when you get performances on the pitch that don't look like, you know, analogous to their value. These are players that, you know, they're all playing for themselves, that really have no team ethic. And this is partly as a consequence of the way the club is run. This is no question as a result of how Manchester United are run from the top down.
Yep.
Where there's a manager, people, I mean, honestly, one of the most infuriating things was in a Guardian podcast earlier saying Manchester United fans are starting to question Eric Ten Hag. Who is starting to question Eric Ten Hag? Because if you've got a basic functioning brain, if you're questioning Eric Ten Hag, I contest that it's functioning. Because if you look at the reasons why United are in this mess, none of them are his fault. I mean, maybe you can say he bears some responsibility for signing certain players, fine. But this has been the case since Alex Ferguson left the club. And now we're at the end of the road because we're going from one crisis to the next, to the next, to the next. When you have a business that does that, and a club United business for a second, that's not an accident, okay?
Yeah.
There's a reason why certain clubs don't have this problem. And there's a reason why Manchester United do. And so when you look at Jadon Sancho, you know, he's played in multiple different managers, multiple different systems, nothing like the organisation that he had at Dortmund, where they had an identity, a strategy. They knew exactly how they wanted to play him. They played him with top-class strikers. They played him, you know, with Haaland. I think Aubameyang was there for a year. You know, top-class players scoring goals week in, week out. How long has it been since they've had an actual number nine? Has Sancho even played with one, really? When you're looking at this level of chaos, that's a consequence of how the football club is run. And all businesses resemble the personality of the owner. Always, right?
Mm-hmm.
The personality and the ideology of the owner. What's important to them? What matters to them? And you judge a business by what it prioritizes, right? Not what it says, but what it prioritizes. And if the priority is sport and success, there would be a disciplinary structure inside the club to prevent this type of thing. If the priority was making sure that the most important thing at the football club was winning football games, this type of thing would be intolerable, right?
So
what we see with Jadon Sancho and how this has escalated as a consequence, of course, how the football club is run. I'm sure fans get tired of us saying that because I get tired of saying it too. But I believe.
But it is true because it's like, what are you going to do? I feel the same way about players a lot of times as I do about the manager. And I felt like this under Rangnick when he was talking about, you know, doing almost the reverse and throwing every player under the bus, you know, publicly. And it was leading to some really unhappy times. And is there some truth to it? Yeah, in terms of the players needing to do better and perform better.
Mm-hmm.
But how many players can we sign? How many managers can we sign and not work? At some point, you have to think, when you look at these numbers about having spent the most money, it's true. I mean, you can't deny it. We've spent money. We've signed dozens and dozens of players that haven't worked, that have been unsuccessful transfers. And we can keep blaming every individual involved in the player, in the coach, in the manager, or whatever. but it keeps happening. And there has, you know, and it is, it does come from, you know, on high, and managers aren't perfect. You know, the reason I don't blame Ten Hag for the situation, even though I think maybe he could deal with it a bit differently, is that why is it down to him anyway? You know, at Dortmund, one of the things I know that is true is that their management team is heavily involved in the playing squad, in the management of them at all times, well above the manager. It's the same at Bayern. It's the same at Madrid. You think Florentino Perez doesn't get involved in practically everything mm-hmm. in terms of management and oversee it. There's a caring from on high over what happens on the pitch and over the football team that extends into all the way down into the dressing room in terms of what's actually going on there and what's happening. And they can protect managers in that way. And they can support managers in that way. And they can make sure they have less non-football related on the pitch stuff to deal with. Because the more that they have to deal with these things, the less time, the less energy, the less focus, the less everything they have for what matters. Erik ten Hag is a manager, but he's primarily a football coach, right? That's what he's hired for, to go out on Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday, and produce a result, to put a good team out, to put a good tactic out, to study, to watch film, to do the things that are about that. And anytime he's not doing that and dealing with other matters, it is to the detriment of the football club as a football club. And that's where the structure and the support are just constantly lacking from on high. Because if they cared enough about the football, they would let him be the football coach. And that would be the best solution.
I don't care how much money you put into your construction materials. I don't care how much money you put into your interior. I don't care if you get the best builders in the world. If you're going to construct something on sand, eventually it's going to collapse yep. once it bears enough weight. So it's always the foundations. If everything goes to chaos after a year or two, once United bear weight, once they actually have something that looks like they're getting built, that looks like they're making progress, and comes full, it collapses every 2 years, you know, that is foundational. Yep. That is because of what it's being built on. It's not yep. capable of sustaining that. It's not capable of supporting that. And it's very difficult to build anything. It might look nice after a year where it makes look like we're making progress, but the first sign of any stress, that building is coming down because of the foundations that it's built on. So this is going to be a repeated problem. And I don't mean to make everything the Glazers' problem, because there's certainly things that exist at United that aren't always their problem, but everything is a derivative of their ownership and how they run the club. And I don't think United will ever be successful while they're there. I don't care if Manchester City didn't exist. We can talk about 115 charges, and yes, that's relevant, but even if City didn't exist, United would still be in the same position there. Yeah. And their own incompetence has cost them more than any competitor, more than any circumstance that exists in any other club. United's own incompetence has cost them. I want to ask you about Mike Phelan interview while we're briefly talking about that. What was your take on that?
It's interesting because obviously, you know, Mike comes from the same era in terms of being a successful coach as Cristiano Ronaldo as a player at United. He was there during the periods of United success and standards, and you know, it's tricky because there's a lot of truth obviously in what's been said about it and in Ronaldo raising the standards, and at the same time you think, well, you know, Erik ten Hag, as we can see, seems to have extremely high standards as well. Maybe this was probably far more of an issue under, you know, when he first arrived while Ole was still manager, and when Ralf Rangnick came in. I mean, you had situations, and this extends to the players but also extends to the coach. You had situations where, like, Ralf Rangnick called them all in for training and he wasn't even there himself. You know, he was still on vacation. But it is tricky. I mean, I think there has been a lot of truth in that. When it first came up, regardless of how Ronaldo was performing on the pitch, the sentiment behind all of it is very true, that the standards there have mm-hmm. not been there and have not been set to the level that they should. And it pertains, of course, to what we were just talking about with Sancho. It's the same
exactly
thing.
Right.
There have not been the mm-hmm. standards there behind the scenes to where you can't make the standard be just what the manager's asking for. It takes more than one person at a group, at a club this size, at a place this size. It takes more than one person. And there's obviously a change in the player culture now than there was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And that's a natural consequence that happens in every sport, has changed in every sport, but not every sport has these issues either. And not every team has these issues either. And it certainly is it's a consequence of a few things. And, you know, some of it is, you know, things that maybe Ronaldo has right, and maybe some of that he didn't. Some of it is the fact that of how much money they're paid now, and Ronaldo himself included in that, taking in a lot of money from the club. And there's a lot of players, Jadon Sancho too, who takes in a lot of money to where they're not feeling the same motivation or drive to earn it, because players are like that too. And there's a lot of reasons for it, but it's true. You know, it can be true, and it can still be true, you know, that it was a good time for Ronaldo to part from Manchester United when he did, and that some of the other things he did were wrong. You know, not everybody is 100% either way, right?
So my view on this is, you're correct in saying that obviously player culture has changed, but it certainly hasn't changed at Real Madrid. It certainly hasn't changed at Manchester City. Erling Haaland's only £800,000 a week. He's got no problem showing up, performing at the very highest level every week. The best players in the world, they're on exorbitant amounts of money, but they show up every week and they perform. To me, this is always based on where you work and the standards and the incentives and the objectives of your business. So if you go somewhere and you're exceptionally well compensated, as is human nature, and you're not expected to do certain things every week, to perform to the most exceptional level, to be exceptional professional, standards will slip, because human beings are like that. And very few people are like Ronaldo, where one of the hardest things in life is consistency. Because human beings are affected by the vicissitudes of life, by all the things that go on around them, by what's going on in their family, by mental health, by, you know, stress here, you know, all sorts of variables that affect you as a human being, that affect how you do your job. And you almost have to be a bit sociopathic to be able to shut those things out, right? I mean, if you look at the best athletes that are ridiculously consistent, they've almost got a bit of sociopath about them, where they're a bit of a freak, you know, because they aren't affected by those things. So very rarely does it affect their performance. I mean, you could see a situation where one of them loses a child and a week later they're playing to the best of their ability. Well, how does a human being do that? You know, there are people that, it doesn't matter what sport it is. I've seen this in boxing, I've seen this in soccer, I've seen this in basketball. It doesn't matter, right? The people at the very, very top that perform consistently are able to do things that other people can't. However, the environment, every organism adapts to its environment. And if you walk into an environment that says, we don't really have to win the league, we don't really have to win, eventually you will adapt to that. That's just that's just the way it is. There's no accept. But if you go to Real Madrid and you haven't won the league in 10 years, that would be unacceptable. Right, you certainly would not be going out getting Marcel Sabitzer or Jack Butland on loan, right? These are the teams you need to compare themselves with. I mean, they repeatedly say the biggest club in the world, by what magic, I don't know, right? But when I look at how United have recruited over the last 2 years, they're certainly not competing with Real Madrid. They're certainly not competing to win the biggest trophies in world football, blatantly obvious, right? You just, you know, you're not looking for a break clause in a Sergio Reguilon loan deal, right? if that's your goal, right? And this needs to be understood when you're talking about what's realistic for Ten Hag to accomplish, right? If Ten Hag's at Bayern Munich, this isn't happening, you know? Or any top club that says, we hold ourselves accountable to the highest standards, and the only metric of success for us is sport. So these are football clubs that operate on a whole different level, and they have a whole different expectation of their players. I mean, Eden Hazard got released, never been released at United, never. I mean, look how long Phil Jones was at the club. Now, I'm not knocking Phil Jones, I feel bad for his injuries. Look how long Martial at the football club, right? They were never. You know, Harry Maguire, right? And we'll get to him in a bit. To me, they don't survive at top clubs, right? If you can't, you don't get more than two seasons. If you don't perform, you're out. it. You need it. There's always a safe place for years and years and years of underperformance because the rating metrics are different. So Ronaldo's standards can be seen with Sancho, with lots of other players that are quite happy to show up every week, and if they don't win, it's not the end of the world. And once you get into that, it's very, very difficult to address.
It's hard to get out of it, yes,
because you need to change your whole, not just the playing squad, but the whole culture at the football club. So to me, the biggest thing that's changing that it isn't player culture, it's the culture of the football club. All right, let's move
on. For sure.
Let me talk to you about Anthony, my friend. Tell me what you think of all that.
Well, you know, you and I had a lot of discussions a month ago now, when the Mason Greenwood thing had come to a head, and we knew they were intending to bring Mason Greenwood back, and that, you know, from one perspective, right? I mean, from a literal perspective, no charges against him at that point in time, nothing under investigation officially, no ongoing real risk involved in it from a legal perspective. United having gone through their own investigation and determining that he was safe to return from whatever perspective they determined that from, right or wrong. When they turned around and said he cannot return to the team because of the backlash, whatever reasons they want to give for that, that was the reason why. Everybody knows it, no matter what is said. I said to you, whether you think this is right or wrong, the problem now is 100% they're going to have to suspend Anthony in the future. It's coming. We spoke about it. It was like a sure thing. They're going to suspend Anthony. It's coming in the next month. It's done. Because the day those charges go public, the investigation goes public, you get these accusers, and it becomes a big deal.
Yeah.
You're going to have a few things happening. You're going to have representatives from Mason Greenwood's legal team calling and saying, hang on a second. Why is this player who represents a bigger legal risk to your club right now allowed to continue to walk out there on the pitch every day and our client isn't? When the decision to not allow him to return has implications for his future career, image, all sorts of things. And I'm not talking about right or wrong here from a moral perspective, okay, right? I'm talking about how business works, how these things happen, how PR is, and just the general what goes on a day-to-day basis. We knew this was going to happen, that they were going to have to, in effect, suspend Anthony in one way or another, not allow him to be around the team. And of course, the precedent is now what happens if there's accusations against another player? Where's the line? How do you have to judge whether those accusations are credible? Is that now up to the club to judge whether those accusations are credible? This is the danger behind the entire situation, and I don't even, it's tricky because I could give my opinions, but they sort of don't matter on the whole thing. It's an ugly situation. I don't know if he did it or didn't do it. It's not up to me. It's not up to us, but something's wrong here that, you know, Richard Arnold has become over the last few months an adjudicator on justice matters, on legal matters, of which he's going to have to be at any point in running a business. But, you know, it's difficult, and there has to be some kind of standard, you know, coming in from people from the league, from somewhere, that says, this is how we deal with things when this happens. There just has to be, or I don't know what happens next with all of this.
You know, again, with the qualifier that I'm not qualified to evaluate evidence, so I don't know the veracity of it. I would say that the second and third allegation, to my ignorant mind, looks weak. The first one is interesting to me because the alleged victim has included a number of high-profile witnesses in that. And usually if your beak gets something up or embellishing something, you don't do that because that's easily verifiable. And I think that does pose a very serious risk for Anthony. United were very careful in the statement saying he wasn't suspended. which of course then does not make it a story to bring him back. They give him extended leave. Although I'm not sure that it's going to make an awful lot of difference if he comes back. And this case is still going on. You know, United obviously, I think, would have preferred to have used that wording with Mason Greenwood rather than suspend. But they're trying to be clever so that when they bring Anthony back, it's not a story.
Yeah.
But I still think it will be. Because as soon as you give him extended leave, you still have to justify bringing him back, no matter what language you use. And I totally accept the fact innocent until proven guilty, and the legal system absolutely must work that way. No matter how uncomfortable this may make some people feel, you know, and if Anthony's not found guilty, you get a presumption of innocence. You're not found innocent. You're presumed innocent. There's a big difference. Because I'm still surprised that United allowed that statement from Mason Greenwood to say that he was, you know, cleared of all charges, which really should not have escaped United's legal team and should have been made clear that that's not what happened at all. I mean, that is a big, that is not a small incidental error. You know, so that's factually incorrect. But, you know, I would imagine it had eyeballs on that before it was printed up. At least I would hope they did. Anyway, we will see what happens. One of the things that I find a little bit odd about all of this is, like you were saying, we were talking about this. I mean, I first became aware of this. We probably first became aware of this when I would say around June. And I'd asked United about this around June, and I want to be fair because what they said to me will remain private, but you know, not as it should. But anyway, there was acknowledgement that these charges existed, allegations existed. So none of what United became aware of will have been a surprise to them. They will have known about all of this. So why wasn't there countermeasures taken, especially knowing exactly how Mason Greenwood went and saying, okay, look, there's a high probability we're going to have to do the same with Anthony that we're going to do with Mason Greenwood, so let's plan accordingly this summer. And again, I'm looking at Mason Mount. Mason Mount, very, very good player, no doubt. But maybe the focus should have been on making sure there was another forward brought in, given that this was a high probability this could happen. Obviously, like you said, I'm sure they thought Ahmad would be available. And maybe that factored into their thinking, I don't know. I just don't understand how United did not plan accordingly for this. Even when you look at the whole Jadon Sancho situation, you know, none of what happened with Jadon Sancho would have been this major shock to United. And I really don't understand why Ten Hag goes public, you know, the first opportunity after the window closes on it. Because, like you quite rightly point out, this usually signifies the end of a relationship. And what are you going to do between now? How does it benefit Ten Hag to do this? I mean, United have played players in between transfer windows that they know they're going to get rid of, right? You know, and said, okay, let them play, but we'll get rid of them in the summer because they serve a purpose. So again, it's been just really poorly mismanaged, no foresight. And I think, again, teams, it shows the football club is on its uppers, as they say, where they're just, the cupboard is completely bare and they are incapable of bringing players in to deal with these types of issues, and which led to the, normally you'd laugh this rumour off, the Anwar El Ghazi rumour, but with United it's entirely believable.
I was like, well, it might be, because
and this is where we're at.
I mean, it's like, this is, it's almost like this is exactly what you expect.
But this is so painful. Every single day you're getting up and going, this is unbelievably painful. And I believe this, and we'll get to this in a minute, this is how the Glazer tenure ends. This is how it was always going to end. Do you have anything else to say on Anthony before we move on?
No, you know, I mean, I guess to me, at the end of the day, when I look at it, you know, when you ask that question, had they not planned for this? They were going to bring Mason Greenwood back, of course. And so I think the plan was, you know,
yeah, good point.
We're allowed to say it, right? That we're allowed to talk about it being in the U.S., that Arsenal have continued to just play Thomas Partey.
Mm-hmm.
Like nothing ever happened.
I know. It is disgraceful. It's totally like, disgraceful to me.
It's like nothing ever happened. And it's weird, this situation that, you know, Mason Greenwood's situation is allowed to be extremely highly publicized and named. Mm-hmm. Antony's situation is allowed to be extremely highly publicized and named. And Thomas Partey, who's the only one who's been arrested and currently charged of those three players, who currently has charges, is protected. It's bizarre to me. It makes no sense. It's a very backwards. It's so odd. I can't quite think with it. But I think
you get two weak excuses on that, James. You get one excuse that we don't want to compromise the trial, and two, labor laws. But that to me is weak.
Yeah, I don't see how it can. I mean, we have in the U.S. You don't have any of those protections afforded.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. I've never really seen any study done to prove that their name being public affects the trial, or anything like that in any way. I mean, obviously there's things with juries and things like that, but it's a little bit different. I mean, Benjamin Mendy was cleared of all charges in the end, right? In court, everybody knew his name. His name was said many, many times prior to the whole thing.
To me, you don't have to prejudice the trial by, you know, doing character reference or anything else. There's a space that can be occupied by criticizing Arsenal for not suspending him.
Right, exactly.
And saying, hang on a minute, this is getting off. Because
we don't have to talk about the actual case and what happened or anything like that.
The premise that the alleged victim is telling the truth, okay? Yeah. That's a civil standard, not a criminal standard, right?
Correct.
So there's an onus on Arsenal to make sure, hang on a minute, until we get to the bottom of this, you shouldn't be playing here, right?
Yeah.
And somehow that has escaped the moral compass of the hand-wringing of certain journalists, which, by the way, I commend a lot of the coverage because they were correct.
Yeah.
But I just don't understand this blind spot. Why is this allowed? This guy plays and he's getting 7 out of 10 in the same newspapers that are slaughtering United for not suspending players. And going,
I know.
I'm confused.
I know.
I don't get it.
And I'm sure that's part of the premise United are operating off of.
Of course.
We can let Antony play. He's not arrested. He's not charged. He's not even arrested. He doesn't even have charges leveled against him.
Yeah, it's
a very confusing situation. But that's why there needs to be an independent body on these things at the end of the day, right? There has to be an independent body.
Like, you take the party decision out of Arsenal's hands, right?
Yep.
And Mikel Arteta, by the way, was the same individual that lost his tongue when asked about the Rubiales situation and, you know, straight batted it and, oh, I want to comment. Bullshit,
Mikel. Yeah, exactly.
Right? Xavi had no problems with commenting. You know, lots of other ex-players didn't have an issue. And Mikel Arteta, maybe his trousers were a bit too tight, cut off circulation in his brain, and couldn't find the words to speak about something that's so easy and such a low bar. I'm sure the women at Arsenal didn't like that. And I'm sure, you know, maybe if you go out and watch some of the women's team at Arsenal, how they feel about their manager and capable of condemning sexual assault, how they'd feel about that, but somehow that does not matter. So, look, again, another embarrassing situation, completely, you know, embarrassing the football club and a reactive stance on it. Before we get to the takeover, I want to ask you about Maguire. Lots of commentary on Harry Maguire. I'll give you my take on it, then you fire away. So, there's two sides to this. There's a human side, and as a human being, Harry Maguire is clearly someone in pain. It's difficult, and I feel sorry for him. There's no hiding place, and there is definitely a threshold between legitimate criticism, legitimate analysis, and abuse. I don't know what it is, not well defined, and everyone else will have their own opinion on it. But to me, a place and a professional athlete never wants to be is in the position of being pitied, and that's where Maguire is. And here's my criticism, James, right? Because these people coming out saying Southgate, for example, the way he's been treated, is a disgrace. Well, first of all, you shouldn't have picked him for England, because anybody that's watched Harry Maguire for the last 2.5 years will know he's been doing that week in, week out. There's a high, playing for England is a highly coveted, or any international team's highly coveted position that used to be rewarded based on consistency. And there'll be players that aren't getting to play for England that would love that opportunity that can't because Harry Maguire's taken that place. If you put someone in at a level consistently, that they consistently show you that they're not capable of performing it anymore, maybe they were at one point, and they keep making mistakes, then at some point it's on you, right? So Gareth Southgate has to take responsibility. Harry Maguire should not have been in that England team. And I feel like Southgate is picking him because he wants to prove a point now. Had he not been picked for that England team, that doesn't happen. Had he been protected and say, you know what, go play regular football and get your confidence back, and then we'll discuss it. Because at this point, I'm not doing him any favours. And infantilising him and saying he shouldn't be analysed or criticised when he doesn't play well is not acceptable. Also, playing in the Premier League and playing for Manchester United is one of the most coveted positions in the world. Millions of footballers, 99.99999% of people that kick a ball will never get to that level. And are confronted with the reality every single day that they're not good enough to play for Manchester United. Not good enough to get a £200,000 a week, £180,000 a week contract. There'll be players that have to accept that, you know, 30 years of age, they can't play at that level anymore, and they have to drop down. Harry Maguire chose not to leave United.
Yeah.
A place where he's typecast, right? A place where he has to be held accountable based on his performances. You look at Jaap Stam. How long did Jaap Stam survive at United? Right? Just a minuscule decline, boom, yep. Out. Roy
yep.
Keane,
yep.
Out. Brian Robson, left out of the cup final in his last game, right? You know, lots mm-hmm. of players with just minuscule decline, out. Right? No empathy or no sympathy. You know, this is not a community outreach program. You don't yep. get a contract yep. because you're a nice guy or because, you know, this or that, and because your mum going on TV saying it's not fair and my son being criticised.
Right.
Harry Maguire should have left United. If you and I played for Manchester United, we'd be getting the same. For exactly mm-hmm. the same reason. Because yep. we're not good enough yep. to play there. Okay? Yep. And when you cost your team points, when you are costing your team the opportunity to rebuild, fans have every right to be pissed off at that. Fans have every right when yep. the only thing you're doing is taking money, when you're coming out with statements saying you've got nothing to prove, you've everything to prove, right? Yep. When you are coming on against Arsenal at the weekend, right? And I've said this before, those goals don't happen if Martinez is not on the pitch. The goals mm-hmm. against Sevilla don't happen if Martinez is on the pitch, right? The sack opportunity that happened right before Arsenal scored doesn't happen if Martinez is on yep. the pitch. Why do we, as United fans, have to have this inflicted on us and say, okay, you know what, it's okay if we lose because we don't want to criticise Harry. Like, this is bullshit, mate. This is infantilising nonsense. The reality yeah. is Maguire should have left. He chose not to because he wanted to protect his wages, his pay packet. And if that's the case, then you fans have a right to be upset at that.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, it's a tricky situation because it's, again, one of these things, like, we're looking at the back end of it now, too, right? We know the relationship is done. There's yeah, no repairing why is he still this there? Relationship. But, well, I know. And that's the thing is, like, it is ridiculous. You know, I think it's the way it started was probably a bit odd. You know, he had two pretty good years under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And I remember when he missed the Europa final, it was like a huge blow to United when he wasn't there. And they probably win that game if he'd been there. And then the following year, everything goes to crap with him, with the coach, with everybody. But the thing about it is, of course, he should go. And like you said, when players' performances drop off, then that's it. It still comes back to the same issue of, you know, at no other club would he have been allowed to stay if they had decided on a replacement. But, you know, part of the problem with this is, again, part of it was Erik ten Hag's decision later on to block him leaving.
Because he wasn't getting the money to replace him.
Because he wasn't getting the money to replace him. Benjamin Pavard is not the requisite level of player that United need to replace Harry Maguire long term. You're talking about, you know, Rafael Varane, who cannot stay healthy, unfortunately. Great player, was incredible. His injuries have been piling up for years. We know this. Long-term, United need a first-choice top right center back to replace Harry Maguire and to push Rafael Varane to rotation in this team. Erik ten Hag was not being given the money for that this summer. It was not happening. It was never something that he was going to be given. That priority was not there. We didn't even know if he'd get the three positions he did get money for, right? But he got those three. And then that was it. You could see they shut it down. We want cancel clauses. We want all sorts of things. The money was not there for this. And if Harry Maguire went, it would at best be Benjamin Pavard. And my argument to that matter was I thought that would have been a terrible move, frankly, in my opinion, because you're going to be left with, again, in 2 years, another player who's not up to the requisite level, Rafael Varane not up to the requisite level, and looking at buying yet again and again and again. And that's a little bit of what United do is keep, you know, like you said, when we're talking about look at the types of players that they're buying, Real Madrid are not buying Benjamin Pavard. City and replacing the players that they want to replace, they go out and they spend 100 million on Guardiola. That's the type of quality that they're going to bring in to replace players who are declining a little bit or departing. And that's what United need as well. And so, yeah, there's a bit of it's overstated because it's is how it is, you know, the booing, the things like that of Harry Maguire for just not being a good enough player. There's plenty of players who aren't as successful that don't get that level of criticism that he does. But at the same time, he should have gone. And some of the fault is him and some of the fault is the club because Erik ten Hag didn't push for it really either.
James.
And
he's being
same
booed.
Same story, right?
it's hardly Italian ultra territory.
Oh, no, I know. It's not like it's that dramatic either, right? It is just...
Secondly, if Harry Maguire wasn't English, there is no way a football club's offering 30 million for him.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. I agree.
I mean, in what world... Yeah. I mean, if you watch Maguire over the last couple of years, it's not that he's been bad, he's been utterly appalling. Yeah. And I feel bad for him as a human being because I don't enjoy watching someone, you know, constantly criticised. But whether this is fair or not, when I see Maguire either coming on the pitch or on United's team sheet, I get completely deflated. I'm like, okay, there's at least one major mistake here, two major mistakes. If he goes out, fair chance he's going to play at the weekend against Brighton.
He
makes one or two catastrophic errors that cost United a game when I'm not allowed to criticise him. Because it's hard. I mean, what nonsense are you talking about? This is top-level sport. There is no top-level athlete beyond criticism or analysis. And if you are consistently playing at the highest level and you are consistently poor, you deserve to be criticised because you are compensated like a top-end athlete. Okay, that's the thing. You're asking to be paid as a world-class athlete, you're asking to be treated as one.
Yep.
Well, then, okay. Then I'm going to hold you to those standards. And if you fall below them, then fans have every right to criticize. And that's the reality. United fans would rather not criticize him if he went out, put a good performance in. That would please a lot of people, me included. But he doesn't ever. You know? And I'm sick and tired of him costing United in games. I'm sick and tired of him making errors that don't belong anywhere near this level. I'm like, how much longer is this going to be inflicted on us where we have to pretend that this guy doesn't deserve to be criticised because it's Harry Maguire, because it's too much? You know, I'm sorry. There's kids that have been let go at United because Maguire's got sitting on a contract at 190 grand a week. And did Maguire care about them? You know, I mean.
No, I know. Look, it's the end. It's the end of the. But
I don't know if it is the end.
But it should be.
He's here for another year. I'm gonna tell you something right now. Ten Hag could go before Maguire.
Yeah.
Because see if United lose this weekend, James.
Yeah.
This football club is in a serious death spiral, and I, you know, Welbeck's a doubt. Looks like Evan Ferguson's a doubt. United have loads of injuries everywhere. We're talking about two football clubs who could not be in a greater contrast between each other. One is a football club that is exceptionally well run, has excellence in every department and knows exactly what it's doing and has contingency planning and has a brilliant manager and knows everything where it wants to go. And they're playing against a football club with complete chaos that are just trying to get 7 or 8 good footballers on a pitch and hope they play well and win. And United last season didn't score a single goal against Brighton in open play except an OG, right?
Yep.
They were lucky in that semi final, right? Beaten at Brighton, beaten at Old Trafford, beat at Brighton the year before that 4-1, right? 4-1, I can't remember. The record against Brighton is atrocious.
I know. Right?
And for the same reason. So am I confident that they'll win this weekend? No. But here's the thing, they badly, need a win this weekend. And if they don't win, this is going to, I mean, this, if they don't win, I'm really, really worried about what's, I think it's going to completely implode. I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, you know, again, all of it is just more pile on another situation, another problem, another player, another issue, another drama.
So what do you think is going to happen this weekend?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, there's a couple of points in seasons, and this is one of them, where you kind of get the nature of a club, of a team. Maybe not a club, because we know what the club is. You get a nature of a team. And, you know, some of it is obviously overblown at times here and there. Some of it's media, some of it's noise. Sometimes it works to your benefit as a team, where you can kind of come together. You can't be, you just cannot focus on other things at that point in time. You have to, because you know that the pressure is there. Let's say it applies almost an external standard to how you're doing things. And people have this in all lines of work, actually. Sometimes the external pressures get so big, it forces you to raise things a level to where they need to be. And you kind of will get a measure of the players that are there right now. Can they raise that level, or do they collapse underneath it? And I think you get one or the other. I think you get a demolishing in the reverse, you know, getting demolished as they have before, or you pull something out of this. And there's players there that should be able to raise that level and standard. There's players like Bruno Fernandes. There's players like Casemiro. There's players like Mike Marcus Rashford, who have at many points in time over their United career and previously, of course, in the case of Casemiro, who's done it many times in his life, who have raised that level, who have raised that bar and said, look, we're not going to allow this to go any further. Mm-hmm. And they need to now. And then we'll see what they're made of. I think it's a marker for the season. I think it's a type of game where they turn it around, or it really does implode for the year. And I don't think it's too early to say that.
Every time United have been asked this question, they've answered it, but they've answered it the wrong way.
Okay? I know.
Under pressure against Arsenal, they lose. Under pressure against Arsenal last season, they lose. I remember United losing 5-0 at home to Liverpool.
Yep.
They'd City up next, and they lose. And by the way, that could have been easily another 20-0. Right?
Yeah.
Another spineless performance. Go to Anfield last season after everything that's happened.
Yeah.
Let's make sure that whatever we do, we compete. As soon as the pressure was on second half, they conceded seven goals. Yep. By the way, they conceded 6 at City. So between City and Liverpool away last season, they conceded 13 goals. Right, that is unbelievable. Every single time this team gets asked the question about how you're going to handle pressure, they almost always fold.
Yep.
So I don't have any confidence that they'll respond to the pressure in a positive way, because the thing is with this football club is that it gives you excuses to lose, and it gives you excuses. There's so many other factors that you go to. Their faults, their faults, their fault, this fault, this is that fault, this is fault, and you survive. And so... And what happens is you start, just like you pointed out, some players will start to feel like, you know what, Bruno Fernandes, Casemiro, all that, we're surrounded by players that are happy to lose. And once once they stop believing, like, and show that they can win, then it's very difficult. One thing that really concerned me is after both United's defeats, they've blamed the referee this season, and you really, you know, take accountability for yourself. I just don't have any confidence, especially if Maguire starts this weekend. And it looks like Martinez, Varane are probably out. Amrabat's a doubt. There's a whole host of them, of course. There are doubts, so we'll have to see what happens. All right, mate, last few minutes. I want to talk to you about the takeover, because we put a thing out the other day. Get some good information on Tuesday. You elaborated on this, whilst Ineos have not been told officially they are preferred bidder, they're operating under the premise that they're the preferred bidder.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And of course, one of the issues that they have to address is how they deal with voting rights on the board. Jim Ratcliffe is not stupid. He is well aware of how toxic the Glazers are. I really think the main reason why Jim wants to buy United is primarily because of his legacy, 70 years of age. I don't think he wants to be someone that co-owned United with the Glazers. And, you know, I don't think he would be so stupid as to try to rock up and say, hey, me, Joel and Avram have joined and we're owning this football club, knowing how unacceptable the Glazers are.
Yep.
And obviously it would lower the acquisition cost of the football club, but still it would be significantly high because you've still got to buy out all the four siblings. The question is, why would you do this? But it would appear that they're confident to find a solution to this problem.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of things that have happened here. And, you know, obviously this situation, this whole ownership and takeover situation has been one that has been very difficult to get. It's not something you're going to get regular updates on. It's not something you're going to get lots of information on. It's not something you're going to get a lot of detail. And you're also going to get a lot of conflicting information. You know, you're going to have the official lines from people being nothing's happening. And officially, that is the case, right? The Glazers Reign Group, they've not selected Annie Osser-Serv, Jim Ratcliffe as a preferred bidder. If, you know, there's actually a legal precedent when you're talking about legal preferred bidder or exclusive talk status. It's not just words on a page. There's actually an official thing for something like that. And, you know, what we've been looking at, there's been months where very little has occurred, but Jim Ratcliffe's idea has always been, look, I could take over this club, take over the Glazers shares, maybe work out a way that they're going to get paid in the future. And this has been the crux of the whole situation, is that, you know, Joel and Avram have wanted to maintain something in this club. If they didn't, this club would have been sold to Qatar months ago.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason for that deal to not have moved forward if it was what they wanted. You just have to look at it objectively for a second, that a lot of people don't necessarily want to, and observe that. If they just wanted out, they'd have let the club go to Qatar a long time ago. It's a clean deal. It's simple. It's on the table. It's been on the table. It's there. Why is it not done? They want something out of this. And Jim Ratcliffe has done a lot of mergers and acquisitions. Essentially, it's how its entire business was built on the back of doing that. And the holdup and the long-term delay on all of this from their end, from what they view has been, they prefer us because we can work out some way that Joel and Avram can get paid out of this, something that they feel they're owed or requisite. And we can dislike that. We can hate it. We can say it's crazy that they're still getting, you know, able to profit off of this long term. But they also don't have to let go. Otherwise, as we've seen, they can just sit here for months and months and months not accepting a £5 billion purchase on the table for the club if they're not getting what they want. And this has been the issue from the get-go here, is that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, asking the Glazers to think entirely logically is not worked out that well. It's not an expectation. Everything you think they should do, they end up doing differently. And essentially, Jim Ratcliffe's been trying to work out a solution of some sort, but knowing with that he cannot allow them to have any sort of control over this football club. It's unpalatable to fans. It's unpalatable to him because he knows coming in what he's up against right away and what he's dealing with and the reasons it hasn't worked under Glazer ownership. And as far as we understand it, there has been some conversations in the last few weeks about this. Between people. I can also say I know for a fact that John Reese, one of the partners of Ineos, was in the area in the US not long ago. And these things have happened. And whether it gets done or not is obviously always remaining to be seen, because at different points people have been confident for different reasons, only for things to delay further and to fall through and to stop. But I can say it's probably the first time we've heard in a few months that there's any kind of ongoing activity towards a resolution. and that they feel this is something that they could resolve. But it will have to be. That has to be made clear. They are not going to buy the club. Ineos, Sir Jim Ratcliffe, they're not going to buy the club and not have full control of it. That is just out of the question for everybody.
Well, obviously, there's some split opinion on what people would prefer. Obviously, some people prefer Qatar takeover. And some of this is some of the reasons I've heard on this don't make sense to me. One, let's have it right. If United are well funded, it doesn't matter whether it's well funded by Ineos or Qatar. Qatar can't do anything Ineos can do, and Ineos can't do anything Qatar can do, right? Because they both can only fund the club. Once it's well funded, you know, there's a limit to what they can provide for transfer funds and everything else, right? So you're not going to see a material difference between the two as owners. I understand people saying they want Qatar in because there's the assumption that once they come in, you know, they will start buying, you know, Mbappe and all these top players, and who doesn't want that at the football club? Yep. I understand that, right? But I still don't think that will happen either way. Secondly, you know, when you talk about debt and all that there, if any of us buy the football club and take over responsibility for the debt, United are cleared of that responsibility. Secondly, if it's not impinging on how United run as a football club, then it's not a massive deal to me.
Right.
So as long as United are not, don't have any impediments to competition, to, you know, making sure they can recruit every year, making sure they have the best facilities every year, making sure they compete the top of the market every year, then if any of us are carrying a couple hundred million debt, I really care less than my money. The problem is, you know, the debt is suffocating right now, and it prohibits everything that they do. And of course, that debt was unnecessarily incurred. Glazers are getting paid no matter what. Who buys it, if Qatari buys it, or any of us buy it, they're getting paid. They either get paid up front, they get paid later. There's nothing we can do about that. I want them in a position where they have no control over the direction of this football club and how it runs. If they end up a shareholder still of the football club, where they have no seat in the board, no voting rights, I could live with that. Not perfect, but I could live with that. Because like we say, we're getting paid now, they're getting paid later, it doesn't matter. Especially if there's a, you know, buyer plan over 3-4 years, you know, so I would have bitten your hand off for this for a year ago. So I understand people have different opinions on what the right move is here, and you're entitled to those. But hopefully this gets resolved soon, because as you can see, over the last 2 years, United are unable to compete. Mate, we will leave it there. Thanks to each and every one of you for all the download support, all the retweets, everything. It's been fantastic. We appreciate it. And we'll be back again next week. I have to record the game on Saturday. I'm going to have a knee surgery on Saturday, right whenever this game is on. So hopefully, when I come out of that surgery, I'm high on drugs. I have a completely different take. All right, mate, I will talk to you next week. Thanks to everyone.
Great speaking with you again.
Take care. Take care, folks. Bye.